First thing we always do is our perspective. So whether it's a school, whether it's a community, whether it's working with a city agency around an initiative, we do a walk and our own assessment. What did you see? What did it feel like? Et cetera, et cetera. Then we compare that to asking the same questions to the community or to the stakeholders. And then we just keep going back to be able to make sure that we're asking the right question. Then, and that's where that mind mapping comes in. We look at the commonality. Well, X amount of community members say this, X amount of community members say this, all the community members say this. That's a commonality. That's the direction we should move in. So we take our cues from the community by assessing the data and trial and error in terms of asking the right questions.
You're listening to the Communitas of New York podcast, where we invite you, our business-focused listener, to join us in our strategic focus on business development, specifically with guests who are alumni of the Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program. In our third season, we hold conversations about engagement and community-driven entrepreneurship. Creating positive and hyper-local impact means fostering deep understanding with stakeholders. We invite you to hear entrepreneurs discuss their own experiences with meeting and collaborating with their fellow community members where they are at, developing and serving with carefully designed and innovative solutions. I'm your host, Monique T. Marshall. This is episode 16 with Moya Elena Wallace of Equity Design. Maria Elena, welcome to Communitas of New York. Such a treat to have you on the show. So welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here. I'm going to give you some insight because today's my birthday.
What? Happy birthday. Happy Earth Day. This is so special that you're here. So you're having a good birthday?
Yeah. So when I saw that there was a slot for today, I was like, what better way to spend my birthday?
Yes. Well, we appreciate you for spending your day with us. So this is going to be so much more fun. Okay. So let's get into it. First, I would love it if you could tell us a little bit about the amazing things that you were doing at Equity Design and a little bit about your venture and how you got started.
Sure. So my venture is Equity Design, and our mission is to be able to close the gap that exists between health, wealth, and life expectancy. And the way we do that is through the customized design of physical activity programming. So we use data and an equity lens to ensure the sustainability of physical activity programming. And so the way we do that is by working with schools, organizations, and communities, and really thinking and learning about the challenges that they face and the barriers that are keeping them from leading a active lifestyle. So that consists of everything from we did a bike fest in the South Bronx, and we learned everything from the lack of safe bike lanes, the lack of safe open streets. So really it's unique in terms of before we think about physical activity, we want to have a better understanding of why physical activity isn't taking place in the school, community, or within an organization.
That is so powerful. And I love that you mentioned you focus on that data and equity lens aspect, because the numbers don't lie. Like, they tell the whole picture. So love that. And also, now, are you focused on the Bronx? And can you explain a little bit more about, if so, the health disparities that affect Bronx locally?
Yes. So when we started in 2019, 100% of our efforts were focused on the Bronx and East Harlem. And so the reason why specifically the Bronx is because the Bronx, even to this day, is still number 62 out of 62 New York State counties as it relates to overall physical activity, socioeconomics, and education. And so what that means is for more than a decade, there have been little to no improvements around those areas. So that's why we said, you know what, we did about 2 years of discovery. We found out some of the whys, and we're just really making it our goal to look at how do we move the needle to at least go from 62 to 61 and then continuing to climb from there.
That is not good. And beyond the discovery and the data that you mentioned, now, have you personally witnessed issues in your own community that have affected your approach or your direction?
So I grew up on the Upper West Side mm-hmm. by design. And yeah. so my parents, my dad from Brazil, my mom's from Virginia. And in looking at the scope of things, realized that in order to make sure that their children have the best education possible, they have to be in the best community possible. So even though they knew they could not afford, you know, to live on the Upper West Side, they were able to, at that time, find an apartment. And to this day, my mom continues to live there. But wow. what I found was that our family was the only one of color mm-hmm. on the block within the scope radius. Mm-hmm. It was tough because the idea was that, you know, if you're there, you could afford it. And so, you know, we could not afford what the community had to offer. And so we were definitely on the outside looking in. And it's a horrible feeling to even whether it relates to the type of service you receive for healthcare. I remember my sister needed this type of dental surgery. My mom couldn't afford it. And I remember the admin assistant or the person at the front was like, well, your address is the Upper West Side. Mm. So I know what it feels like to yeah. not have the resources to help in ensuring that you're successful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's tough. And speaking of the horrible feeling, and so what gave you that perseverance growing up there?
It was more around the flip side to it mm-hmm. is, okay, I see what I don't have, but I can also see what I can have. Mm. And being around open spaces such as Riverside Park. And, you know, it doesn't take much for me to be happy. So I would get up and literally go to the park and to be able to run, jump and play and feel safe, as safe as one can be, to be able to walk to Columbia University and see like, wow, this is what a college campus looks like. So I think it's on one hand, couldn't afford it, but mm-hmm. growing up in New York City, one thing that you do have is access. Well, then it was a token and became a MetroCard. But as long as you had a MetroCard, or in my case, I could scoot under because I was short. I'm not advocating for that, though. But I was resourceful.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
I mean, I love how you, that mindset, and I think that so many people could relate to that. And it's like, you are the type of person that's like the joy, seeing the joy in certain things and, you know, yes. the happy in the other side of things. So Maria Elena, would you say Equity Design is providing that what we can have attitude?
Yes, it was a couple of months ago where we were doing some mind mapping and brainstorming.
Yeah.
And what we found in our data throughout our process for the past couple of years is that people say they want change and they know that change needs to happen. But what needs to happen is an understanding of what comes with that change. Mm-hmm. So people are rigid when it comes to change. They know in theory that this change needs to happen in order for our communities to become healthy, to thrive. But at the same time, you know, the change hurts and it's difficult for some to adapt to it. And so what I say now is like, we're in the business of changing mindsets and attitude.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And it sounds like just from hearing you speak and just your story and your journey, that you are very aware of the long game and what's involved here. So I would love to get more insight into these mind mapping sessions. Like, what are they like?
Well, first, I want to say, yes, if we think about it, right, like yeah. a math equation, it has to be a long game mm-hmm. because what we're doing is we're looking at the systemic racism. Mm-hmm. We're looking at the infrastructures. Some infrastructures have not changed in some communities. And then we're also looking at the output. And so the reason why I say it's like a formula is because we are so knee deep into systemic racism, the systems that have been designed to make sure that communities don't succeed. So it's like, we're going to need years upon years upon years to be able to ensure that not only that we're making these changes, but we're evaluating these changes and that these changes are sustainable. So we are definitely, I'm a runner. So the fact that you said marathon, absolutely. It is a marathon that we're doing here.
Yeah. Certainly. It's such a great example. And I want to talk more about some of the examples of the types of spaces in which equity design operates. So what are some of those examples?
So some of those spaces consist of schools. Some of those spaces consist of streets, communities that have open streets, or we redesign them to have open streets so that physical community members can engage in physical activity, just in case they might not have the infrastructure or access to a gym or even a safe open space or park. We work with local agencies and politicians, think about current infrastructures and look at how we can redesign it so that the infrastructures are also a reflection of the community and the community's culture. So those are the spaces that we work in and around.
So awesome. I love that.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And also in reading about your work, I noticed the phrase non-traditional and sustainable. So what is a non-traditional and sustainable approach to such solutions?
So I grew up in New York City, born and raised. Mm-hmm. And I remember like our school did not have a gym and we didn't have a yard. So what they would do was they would close down the street and we would play in the street. And even though the cars were there, the cars would be our bases when we played tag or hide and seek. So it was just natural for us to be like literally in the streets and use the streets as our playground. And so for taking that childhood memory and looking at some of the schools that have the same problems, but not only that, also seeing that because of technology, and no shade on technology, but technology is keeping us inside. Mm-hmm. And technology is not allowing us to socialize and really getting community members to get to know each other. So in non-traditional spaces, working with the Department of Transportation or our partners like Street Lab to be able to close down streets and utilize open streets to beautify them and to bring communities together and really look at how we address physical activity and play. So that's non-traditional. For sustainability, we then look at how do we turn this over to the community so that they're able to shut down their street, shut down open spaces, and create that culture of whether it's a block party, a family reunion, you know, something for the community where we're celebrating and we're changing our mindset around what the streets look like.
Yeah, this is so enlightening. I mean, that's why you're the expert. So
thank you.
Yeah. And the thing I love also is that this work can happen anywhere.
Like yes.
Anywhere. So with that, what are some of the challenges of working with the folks who help you secure those spaces?
Well, the main challenge is when we look at whether it's discretionary funds, when we look at, you know, city agencies and how they allocate funds or capital and resources, like I understand that there's so many things that the city needs. But at the same time, I'm also looking at the data and seeing, well, if we keep doing this and we keep putting money towards it and we're not seeing any result, then why do we keep doing it? Why are we not exploring more sustainable long-term solutions to problems that relate to health, wealth, physical activity, et cetera? And the approaches cannot be direct and the approach cannot be a check the box. So going back to we're in the business of changing mindset, it's being able to have these conversations with local politicians, with the decision makers of city agencies to really think about their perspective, to think about the reality of where their hands are tied. And then how do we match that with the community? So what we say to the community is, you know, things have to work parallel and two things, you know, can happen at the same time. So yes, cultivate a relationship with politicians and city agencies, because at the end of the day, they have the capital and the resources to make the change, but also fall back on your community. Like, let's go old school grassroots and really look at how do we create community, rely on community to make the changes, use our money and our resources. resources. So, you know, changing infrastructure and talking to those city agencies and politicians, it's really tough. And I give it to them and I empathize. And that's one of our core values, is to really empathize, to show empathy. I empathize with them, because how do you create change with the same doggone dollars that you get year after year after year? Don't get me started now, Monique. You got open.
I mean, that's a lot to think about. It is. It's true.
Yeah.
That's tough. And so in a typical program, so if there is one typical one, let's just say Open Streets or at a school, what are some of the activities we may see if we were to run into Equity Design doing their programs?
So the biggest one that we've ever done this past May, we have a partnership with USA Cycling to increase access to cycling. And the way to do that is through, again, a lens of sustainability approach, and that's physical education. So we work with the physical education teacher, we work with the principal to be able to ensure that the grades have access. So this past school year, we did running and cycling. And then what we did was we looked at how do we have an outcomes, right? Or how are we able to measure our impact? And so we came up collectively with a community duathlon. So we shut down 12 streets, a little over 1,000 meters in the South Bronx, and created this bike lane. We shut down the traffic. We opened it up to the PS18 community in the South Bronx. We created running paths right there in Patterson, in and around Patterson housing. Mm-hmm. Because again, we want to think differently. Yes, we say instead of project, we say housing, campuses, things like that, to change the mindset. I'm walking around my campus, you know, versus I'm walking around in the projects. Mm-hmm. So being able to also think about, like, wow, we gave on that day 275 youth access to cycling. We gave, you know, 70 volunteers an opportunity to have a hands-on connection through cycling and through running. You know, we had music pumping. It was definitely a day of operations from 3 a.m. when we woke up to 3 p.m. when we shut down the street and put the last bike inside. That's so what good. I said.
That is so like, it is a time. And I love that, because you're speaking about being in the business of changing the mindset, and even the shift in vocabulary seems real important. So for example, you mentioned walking around my campus. Is there also a shift in mindset that you foster to help people redefine the way that they think about movement in their own bodies?
Yes. You know, one area that's really good, it makes me think about, is going back to technology. What we found was that as adults, we did not know how our phones were collecting and storing our data. And we did not know how to be able to, unless you were an athlete, you do not know how to use your phone to access your data. Everything from, you know, your Apple Watch or your Samsung Watch, right? It collects data in terms of your VO2 max, in terms of your oxygen, how, you know, how many breaths per minute are you taking? Wow. You know, how many steps are you doing per day? You know, how much sleep are you getting? And so I get it. Like, you know, you look at an Apple Watch or a Samsung Watch, you're like, oh, this is fancy. And you go buy it. But the reality is, you know, if we're going to use technology, how do we empower ourselves to be able to use it to our advantage? And so the first thing that we do is we always say, how many of you have your phones? And they're like, yeah, of course I have my phone. And we show them exactly where, no matter what phone you have, 90% of the time, it's collecting intel on your physical activity. And so that's going to keep you honest in terms of how often you're moving. So we always tell adults, like, check your phone. And that gives you a little insight into how you're moving. And then we always ask, how many of you are walking to the train station? How many of you are taking a moment to maybe get up a little bit earlier to center yourself?
Yeah.
So these are things, and it doesn't cost money, but it does take the resource of time. And it does take the resource of, I need to change my habit so that I can start to see the benefits of the little things that I'm doing to change my health.
Mm-hmm. That is so powerful. And I didn't know it was taking like the breaths and all the things. And I love that. And then I'm curious also, how do you feel about technology being able to do all that?
I mean, I love it in terms mm-hmm. of, for me, the way I use it is to keep in touch.
Yeah.
You know, every now and then I do some dumb scrolling.
Yes. You
know, just to sort of like disconnect. But at the same time, I really utilize my watch and my phone mm-hmm. to see how I'm moving, to see how I'm sleeping, you know. And I always tell my team, like, listen, if you're not good, then how are you going to help a community be good?
Mm-hmm.
So I love how technology can really provide us with a lens on how we can customize our physical activity experience.
Yeah.
The part of technology that I cringe at is that, first off, it's addictive.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we were interviewing students about recess and really trying to look at, is recess really used as a way to foster movement? These kids, these were fourth and fifth graders. They want their phone. You know, recess was their time and they didn't have their phone. Mm-hmm. So what would you do on your phone? They said that they would look at TikTok. They said that they would look at YouTube. They would want to connect with other friends. You know, because it's data that we're collecting,
mm-hmm.
we can't really say, like, that's not good.
You yeah. know,
we want them to continue a conversation with us. And it's like, well, so what do you feel like you're missing out on? And it's like a chance to see what's happening on TikTok. Mm.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. Mm.
Yeah, that is so interesting. And they don't think about it. And like you said, it's not from, okay, I can't judge you and tell you this is what you should be doing. I'm taking this and being an honest moment. But also it's like, okay, well, it is tracking that necessary data to where, okay, now look at what's happening here. Mm-hmm. You aren't being as active as you could be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
I think that's key.
Yeah.
As you could be.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where we pause and then we say, like, okay, what's keeping you?
Yeah.
You know, and we say to, whether it's individuals, what's keeping you? To school leaders, what's keeping you from having the most active, you know, students, from having the most active teachers and mm-hmm. parents, you know, overall school community possible? What's keeping you? And they'll say, like, well, we don't have the space. Do you now? You
yeah.
don't have space?
Yeah.
You got these hallways,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's, again, just going back to eliminating the barriers, eliminating the excuses, and really changing the mindset.
Mm. And I feel like, Maria Elena, you're the perfect person for this work, because as for you, you talk about eliminating excuses and barriers. So you're a champion sprinter. You studied telecommunications, political science, education, communication, and technology, as well as television production. So you also have your certification in personal training.
Yes.
Youth development and training special populations. So how did all of these experiences and skills combine to create the spark for equity design?
Yeah. You know, I think about that all the time.
That's
phenomenal. Thank you. I think about how, like, okay, pieces to a puzzle. And mm-hmm. I take every experience from, whether on the track and whether it's a local, a national, or an international meet, the level of focus and dedication to earn a spot and to be able to toe the line. I think about, like, how do I use those skill sets to do hard things? If I can mm-hmm. run a 400, I can do hard things.
Yeah.
You know? And then I think about the role, you know, I chose political science because of my dad. I went to Alabama A&M.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that, okay, well, you have to pick a minor. And I remember calling my dad and just asking, like, what should I do? Like, I wasn't thinking that. Mm-hmm. And so he said, pick political science. He said, because no matter what you do in life, everything is politics. You're mm-hmm. going to have to negotiate. You're going to have to understand the history of something in order to make a decision to move forward. So, you know, I use politics today, you know, understanding with television and film that there are different people, different characters, there's different settings that you have. How are you trying to write or rewrite a narrative or a story? So, you know, I was talking about Goya and spices before.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely using all of these ingredients for, and really trying to formulate a perfect recipe so I can really serve my community and do them justice.
Yes, so you are certainly doing that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And I love how even in your story, speaking about your family and how they made it possible for you all to have the best education and have access to certain things. So it makes me think of, in addition to this knowledge and your desire to engage with the community, you are also running a business. So did you have the knowledge to run a business before you started Equity Design? Or did you, even in your spirit, it's like, did you just hit the ground running?
Yeah. Aha. Look at that track metaphor. Hit the ground running. So I was fortunate enough to run another social enterprise, Fit for Life NYC, and for about 7 years. And during that time, I learned so much. You know, I was the executive director and I worked with the CEO, who was the social entrepreneur, and just learning about how do you marry, right, your bottom line with this mission, and how do you, and looking at like, it's okay to say no to business, you know, because it doesn't fall in line with your mission. It might fall in line with your revenue, but at the end of the day, your superpower is your mission, and everyone that comes with you and is behind you believes in your mission. And so it was good to be able to learn, right? How do we distinguish who's a good business partner and who's not? Who is transactional, right? I'm a relationship builder. Mm-hmm. And so in business, it really is about, listen, you do this, I do this, we're connected. When we're done, we see you later. Mm-hmm. And so for me, that was hard.
Yeah.
You know, just like transactional, you know, but at the end of the day, you have something I need and I have something you need. So we're going to make this work. We don't have to ask how each other's kids are or anything. We're just doing this thing right here so that we can excel in our areas. So it was good. It was tough to learn that, but it was good. Also, just being able to learn, right, everything from bookkeeping to, you know, putting together policies and procedures, understanding culture, all of these things helped me think about when I transitioned from my role, I was like, what am I going to do next? And I remember our team members now, Talik and Chris, and they were like, that's a no-brainer. You want to start your own?
Yes.
Okay. I guess I'm going to do that. But it's scary. Like, yo, can you say that? Like, ain't no, listen, when I read all these things about being an entrepreneur, I'm like, you know, go get it, make that money, da 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 da. But ain't nobody talking about, yo, this is scary.
Yeah.
Because first you have to rely on you. Then as you grow your team, or like you were talking about your interns, then somebody's looking at you and now they're relying on you. And yes, you're building this brand. And even like sometimes my husband's like, oh, just stop working. I was like, says no one.
It's no one.
Like, what are you create? Like, oh, but you know, you're an entrepreneur, so you could just have your own hours. Like, no, who's telling these lies?
Yeah. That is not how it works.
Exactly. I go to sleep. Oh, I gotta do this. I gotta do that. I gotta do that. Shut your mind up. I wake up. I gotta do this. I gotta do that. Hey, look, I wouldn't change it for the world, but it is hard. It is hard as the summer heat.
That is real. And I also think it's like when you get to that point, it's almost like you get a sense of the freedom and the possibilities. And then it becomes, okay, you have to choose your heart, because the 9 to 5 could be hard too. And business is hard as well. So it's like, okay, choose your struggle.
Oh, you know what? When you said that, I'm a visual person. I'm thinking about like, you know, like when you're playing a video game and it's like, you look to your left, you're a character, look to your left, choose your heart. And
yes. I hear the voice now.
Yeah. And the music in the background.
It's like choose your heart. Next level.
Yes.
And I think that is so great. Like, I feel like the transparency in that story is what people need to hear in the journey. And I think it's great that you shared that. And so now transitioning into the next point of that community driven focus of this season of the podcast. So that community driven entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned falling back on community. And that is exactly what we're focusing on in this season of Communitas of New York. And mm-hmm. you just outlined the transactional nature of business in contrast to your impulse to have an extended human connection. And this is a great frame to dive deeper into the nature of engagement with community. Mm-hmm. So in what ways do you seek out community engagement? And in what ways does the community seek you out?
The way that I see community engagement, I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. We have, through a contract with Bronx Health Reach, we have the opportunity to work in the Morris Heights, University Heights community of the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And what we did was we conducted walking audits and had an opportunity to ask people, do they walk in their community? It's so important to be able to talk to people in the community. It's so important to be able to see how people move in their very community and to ask them what are some of the changes they need. And a lot of times we just had so many thoughtful conversations. And this is just all by walking. Mm-hmm. Like we'll go with our clipboard, we'll split up and just really have an opportunity to talk to as many people as possible. One of the things that we don't do at Equity Design is impose our solution. Mm. Every solution that we've had the opportunity to embark upon and design did not come from us. All we did was just set the framework. So whether it is a vision to create a more walkable Bronx, whether it is a vision to shut down the streets to be able to have a community duathlon, or a vision for a school to be a community fitness hub, that didn't come from us. We take our direction from the community. They tell us how to move. They tell us the barriers that they're facing. And then we in turn say, all right, what is the best way to be able to solve this problem? And that part right there is what gets me and our team members excited. Yeah. How are we solving this problem that the community came to us? We do not go in the direction of a direct service. So we don't say, you know, just example, our teachers need to be more focused. So can we do yoga? No. Like, tell me, why are the teachers not focused? Let's start there. So for us, it's making sure that we're asking the right questions, making sure that we are totally invested in what the community is saying, and then looking at how do we connect the community with the right resources so that they can sustain their solution.
I love that. And I love the fact that you all are so involved with the community. And being that this is the case, it also seems like you and your team serve a wide range of age groups. So
yes.
With this, do you notice any generational differences in terms of approach to physical movement and interaction within the community?
Yes. I always say from like kindergarten or preschool all the way to, let's say, third grade are like the easiest to get moving. There's no like prior knowledge around like, you know, oh, this person is going to, those social skills. Oh, this person's going to look at me funny. Yeah. Oh, I'm not running the same way. Like, because once that fourth and fifth grade hit, you know, they're a little bit all over the place. They're not as engaged. And this is where those direct services or a school community really helping that age group or the upper elementary school kids look at movement and physical activity as a natural part of their day. Mm-hmm. Like, no, we are just as much as you read and write, movement yeah. is a part of that as well. So I always say, you know, like that pre-K to third grade. Then the other part of it is actually the older adult population. So because with the older adult population, what happens is starting to look and understand and think about the role movement plays in their life. Mm-hmm. And how movement will give them the longevity they need. And so those are the two age groups and ranges where we feel it's a little easier to work with them. Mm-hmm. From that middle school, high school, if you didn't lock them in upper elementary and middle school, that movement is medicine, regardless of a traditional or non-traditional space or setting, then we lost them. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah, that is true. And that's an interesting insight because that is the age where you're looking around and seeing all the, am I cool and all the things.
Yep.
Like, I look cool.
Yep. And then when you become that young adult, You know, you're okay. Let's say you're a part of the workforce. So you're working. Either you don't have the resources, the money, which is the money or the time to join a gym, to engage in like some form of physical activity because it requires a membership, or you are in a setting where you feel the park and the environment is unsafe, or you don't have the education to be able to know, well, how can I move in the space and with the resources that I have?
Yes, certainly. And one of the things you also mentioned earlier is that you all take the direction from the community. So they're telling you how to move. Yes. So how do you know when you are asking the right questions? And do you have to wait to examine the impacts to find out that you did ask the right questions?
So typically we know that it's trial and error. And so, you know, we'll have a list of questions because we're all sitting around team members, or we'll have like Bronx Health Reach or other team members from the community be like, oh, okay, let's ask this, let's ask that. And then we get out there and we're like, darn, you know, we got to go back. And so, you know, then we go back again. It takes a while to be able to find the right questions. So we do perspective. First thing we always do is our perspective. So whether it's a school, whether it's a community, whether it's working with a city agency around an initiative, we do a walk and our own assessment. What did you see? What did it feel like? Et cetera, et cetera. Then we compare that to asking the same questions to the community or to the stakeholders. And then we just keep going back to be able to make sure that we're asking the right question. Then, and that's where that mind mapping comes in. We look at the commonalities. Well, X amount of community members say this, X amount of community members say this, all the community members say this, that's a commonality. That's the direction we should move in. So we take our cues from the community by assessing the data and trial and error in terms of asking the right questions.
I love that. And so moving on to some of the actions that you take based on the data, can you talk more about your Right to Run program at PS32?
Yes. So fortunate to be able to have On focuses on running and shoe apparel. And so we partner with them through Right to Run. And Right to Run is to be able to ensure all communities and individuals have access to running and movement. So the way it came about was at PS32, we did an assessment around their physical activity, health, wellness, and nutrition. And through that assessment, one of the things that came about was that community members did not have access to open spaces where they felt safe, as well as a gym that is not too far from them. There is a gym, a Blink, but they have to get on a bus, walk, et cetera, et cetera. So the school said, again, not Equity Design, the school said that we want to be a community fitness hub. We want to be able to figure out how do we open our school's community to access to physical activity to not just the PS32 families, but to all of the families that are within a radius. So this is our fifth year working with them. The first year and a half was relationship building. It was getting teachers to buy in. And so our strategy was working with the teachers first, because the teachers and the leadership, they are the foundation of the school. If your teachers are healthy and well, if your teachers are excited, you know, then they buy in and their students are going to buy in. So in order to really have this community, we had to be able to really talk with, nurture a relationship with the teachers. So we started a walking program, and we encouraged the teachers and administrators to be able to have walking meetings. We measured around the school, which is equivalent to almost a quarter of a mile. We put up signage. We worked with On to put up signage. And then the teachers came up with the goal that they would walk 10,000 miles in one school year. And they did. They exceeded it. They walked 13,000 miles, which is close to 26 million steps. And so we were able to, as an incentive, we were able to give them Garmin watches, which, again, helped us to not only track their steps, the teachers were able to track their sleeping patterns. They were able to, you know, chat with each other. Teachers, they were text. Oh, you haven't moved today, Miss So-and-so.
Competitive.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, so we were able to, in our year one, get the teachers on board, year two, get the parents on board and get the students on board on helped us in terms of like organizing impactful events. They've now been able to build a relationship with Fordham University and their student athletes. They work with the Department of Transportation on the open streets and started an outdoor learning and classroom initiative. So, and they've increased physical activity engagement. So students not only get PE, they get access to swimming and they have access to additional physical activity time. So yeah, these past 5 years, we've been working.
That is beautiful. I love that top-down approach in terms of like the students get to see examples.
Yes.
And representation. So that is so key. I just love that. So beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. And can you share some more examples of your dynamic engagements with stakeholders? So for example, you mentioned your annual Bike Fest Day held at PS 18 in partnership with US Cycling.
Yeah, so we had the opportunity to talk with the principal. We had an engagement session and assessment with the principal, Principal Jordan at PS 18. And one of the things that she talked about and growing up in her community was, you know, she had access to cycling. And so she had a bike and the bike was her mode of transportation and getting around to be able to connect with friends, connect with family members. But like biking was her thing. And so she talked more about the role like technology is playing, the role our streets not being safe. She talked about just overall beautification that we're not proud to be, you know, from areas and communities within the Bronx. And so she wanted to know, how do we change that? So I took that information and I connected with Major Taylor Iron Riders, as well as their development team of racers. And I talked to them about her vision. They were able to help secure a partnership with USA Cycling and get us 68 bikes. And so one hot day in June, the bikes came and those bikes belonged to the PS18 community. And then the Department of Transportation was able to get us 20 adult bikes. So from there, we started to think about, again, accessibility. Accessibility would be best during the school day, physical education class versus after school programming, where it's more of a choice. So students had access now to cycling, and then we wanted to be able to add, just like, okay, right, for ELA, there's an impact. There's standardized testing. How are we measuring the success our students learning? So we thought the same thing. How do we use Bike Fest as an event to be able to assess student riding? And so right now we believe that over 90% of students over the course of the past 2.5 years now know how to ride a bike at PS 18. And when we say ride a bike, we have clinics on weekends. They're also taking it during their school day and the Bike Fest. And this past school year, the community duathlon, our goal is that 100% of the students will know how to run. Yep. Run. Mm-hmm. Running is a skill set. Mm-hmm. We'll know how to run. We'll know how to ride and race a bike. And this year, we are tackling swimming. So the goal is every PS 18 student, before they graduate, will have access to riding, running, and swimming.
That is beautiful. Yeah.
And again, it wasn't us.
It was community.
Yes. Yes.
It's community. And Maria Elena, I am curious with this, your approach to when you are developing curriculum. So what types of frameworks or theories do you employ as you are developing your curriculum?
So the other part of what I've done and a part of my learning in academics was instructional design and theory. Mm-hmm. And so I always look at two things. One, the theory as it relates to multiple perspectives. And then the other one is multiple intelligence. And so multiple intelligence, which is by Howard Gardner, is based in the theory that every person does not learn the same and every person has a different skill set. So we can introduce and we should introduce youth to everything from ELA to kinetics, to math, to spatial, to nature, to like all these different principles of learning. And they will in turn navigate to the area that they feel is their superpower. But we need to be able to introduce that. So my thought process is that students automatically get introduced to ELA in math, in science. How are we introducing them to different ways of movement outside of PE? How are we ensuring that they have access? So that's one way. Then I look at multiple perspectives. And multiple perspectives basically says, even though in our minds, we have this solution and we automatically go to like, yo, this is it. This is it. We should do this. But how fair is that? Why am I going to come in or any of my team members come in to say, this is how you should do it? We don't live there. We may work there in that community. But if we truly want to be able to serve that community, we have to get their perspective. And then we need to get the city agency's perspective. We need to get the politician's perspective. We need to get the business person's perspective before we actually start to move towards that change. So those are the two, when we're thinking about, we do more so frameworks. So when we're thinking about building out the framework, this is the two areas we look at. How are we taking this holistic approach? And how are we ensuring that we're gaining every perspective possible?
Mm-hmm. I love that. And do you have ideal instructor to participant ratio when it comes to your programs?
So ideally, it really depends. Mm-hmm. So in theory, right, you know, for us, we have been in situations where we've had like, you know, done 1 to 50. Mm-hmm. And it's only because, you know, the school or the community only has this time slot. So we work around it. And it's a matter of understanding. We understand spaces. We understand how people can move in that space. And we also understand what is the best experience possible that we can give an individual. So ideally, there's different settings and ratios for younger youth. So like those pre-K versus your middle school versus your high school and your older adult population. So it's really hard to like come in with a number around that.
I love that. And I can understand that. So in your experience, what are some of those eureka moments in your work? Is a revelation or something that really made you reflect on the way that you are guiding your venture?
The eureka moment is actually as a business owner, like I can't do this by myself. Mm-hmm. Like I really have to think about, you know, who do I need as team members? The other part is I have to let go and understand that there's a way that I would do it, but trust that if I'm bringing this person on board, that this person has the best intentions possible. And so they may have a different way. But again, at the end of the day, the foundation and the mission is still the same. They just might have a different approach to it. So as we started to grow, I just started to realize like, I can't do this on my own. Yeah. And, you know, what does that equity design culture look like? And what type of team member do I want to bring on board? And how do we continue to expand so that we can consistently serve the community?
Mm-hmm. And I think that a listener definitely can relate to that when you speak about not wanting to let go and that being that eureka moment for you. And I'm sure in this experience, there have also been some of those reality check moments or struggles or sobering moments. What have been those reality check moments for you?
Yeah, I think the reality check moment is we aren't a nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard sometimes to say no. So like when people or like organizations will reach out, especially as it relates to direct service, and it's hard for some organizations to understand what we do. And at the bulk of it, we are a capacity building strategy organization. And so, you know, we don't do direct service, but we model what it looks like. So the toughest part is to be able to say no and to be able to get them to understand, right? The best analogy I can give is a trainer. You go to a trainer and you say, I want to start to work out. At the end of the day, majority of the trainers are going to lock you in so that you can continue, right, to pay for their services. Mm-hmm. We're not trying to lock you in. Mm-hmm. We want to be able to ensure our communities, our stakeholders can sustain this on their own. So, you know, while in our minds, we know how to perform the direct service, the real work is the capacity building and the strategy to ensure each of our communities not only can sustain it, but have changed their mindset and approach to what physical activity and health looks like in their community.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. The business in changing the mindset.
Yes.
Yeah. And speaking of the reality check moments, I really like to discuss the act of planning and observing results, as well as some of the challenges that do inevitably happen, no matter how well planned an endeavor may be. So it's clear that you engage in strategic planning through which you don't skip any of the steps in the process. So can you give some examples of this kind of planning?
Yeah. So the best example that I could give, just like you said before, it's a marathon. So it is a slow process, right? And sometimes because some leadership, they really look to, well, we need to get this done. And in my mind, yes, we do need to get it done, but we got here, right? This is decades, again, decades upon decades of us getting here. So we are not going to pull out of this right away. And so there's some moments where I want to skip from A all the way to Z. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes that's what direct service does, right? You put a Band-Aid on it so that you can hopefully try to move forward. But I mean, you're not really addressing the wound. Mm-hmm. You're just covering it up. So a lot of times, again, I sit there and even some of our team members sit there and we have the solution in our mind, but we have to be able to stay true to the process. And listen, it doesn't work for everybody, but I always remind the organization or the leadership, like, what is your vision? If this is truly your vision, then we need to be able to ensure the process. That's like saying to a prospective Olympic athlete, you're not going to practice for 4 years. 4 years. People don't realize that once a person says that they want to be at the next Olympics, it is 4 years of practicing. And this is how I utilize being on the track. You can't skip a beat. You just can't. If this is the results you want, you can't skip a beat.
Yeah. And similarly, like you mentioned, in a marathon, you have to get to that finish line, but you also have to keep track of your pace. So it's like staying true to that.
Look
process.
At you. Yeah. Yes.
Sometimes you want to skip from A to Z, but you can't. And so despite excellently planned out programs, you do have to improvise. So what are some of those ways that you've had to improvise?
Honestly, the improvisation comes when we are scheduling meetings with leadership, especially schools, and they either don't show up or we're at the school and let's say we're supposed to meet at 9 and something is happening in the school and we don't meet till like 11 or 12. Mm. And so again, this is where one of our core values, empathy, comes in because yes, we have this day plan. You know, this is the flexibility. So I would say like improvise. So it's more like for us being flexible and understanding what our stakeholders need at that moment. And so for some principals or assistant principals, they don't need a meeting with us. They might need us to be able to jump in to, you know, this student is sitting here. Can you just sit with this student? And so we do that because that is what this person needs in this moment. And it gives us insight into how a leader may want to change their community. Mm-hmm. But if a leader isn't given the necessary time to be able to think through their vision, then it's not going to happen. A lot of improvising, a lot of flexibility on our end.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of that, like adapting to these varied spaces that you work in do sometimes become a challenge. So do you have any tools or tricks in order to make each and every space work for each and every community group?
We do. One of the things that we do well is that between myself, Talik, who's our program design associate, is that we're able to step back. If someone says to us, I remember one time we were supposed to have like a big open like gymnasium space. And then they were like, well, all we have is the auditorium. All right, we'll make it work. Mm-hmm. And so you have to take in a quick second. You have to think about safety, operations. How are we making movement work? Can we utilize the stage? How can we utilize, you know, the auditorium seats? How do we, you know, okay, there's a little bit up a hill. All right, somebody, you have to quickly do all of these things. And in order to do that, you have to understand movement. You have to have an understanding of space, spatial awareness. So we do all of these things quickly. Very rare do we say no. We make it work because the moment we say no, or the moment we say, well, we can reschedule, we lost them. Mm. And again, thinking about especially our school leaders, especially our communities, there might not be another time.
Yeah. That is so true. And Maria Elena, may I ask about some of the funding sources, or how do you deal with funding?
So as a business, one of the things that we look at is we are a city and state, MWBE. So we work with city agencies such as the Department of Education and the Department of Health. And so they contract us for various services. We are also a subcontractor with local community health organizations who have been contracted by the CDC or the New York State Department of Health. And the reason why we focus on those decision makers is because, just like you said earlier, right, it's a top-down approach. Mm-hmm. The New York State Department of Health, the CDC, all of these bureaucracies are the ones that ultimately make the decision. And so if we can be the eyes on a more local level to help them understand, like, this might work for Buffalo, but this isn't working for the Bronx.
Yeah.
You know, so for us, when it comes to funding streams, we take a more, as opposed to going like school by school, we look at, okay, who are the decision makers? And from there, how much of a larger impact can we have by working more maybe on a district level, city level, state level? And that also includes not only strategy, but policy as well.
Mm-hmm. Love that. And of course, we are on the Communitas of New York podcast.
Yes, so yes.
You were a member of not one, but two cohorts of Communitas Ventures Accelerator Program. So can you talk a little bit about your experience with Communitas America?
Yes, just love the experience, love the camaraderie. It was interesting because it was on my birthday in 2019 when on my Instagram feed, Communitas, you know, once again, your Instagram is listening, you know, Communitas popped up. And I'm like, this must be a sign.
Yes.
And so what I was looking for was a community of social entrepreneurs that look like me. And, you know, while the city has these great programs, you know, there are foundations that have great programs as well, to be able to be with entrepreneurs that are serving the exact same community as you and who look like you, our conversations, the way our approach, our camaraderie, it was priceless. So I value being able to connect, you know, through Communitas. Each week we had a different special guest to be able to give us some insight around their business and how they run it. Was able to understand what it means to do discoveries. And I tell people all the time, like, yeah, doing 50 discoveries, it sounds like a lot. What it really was is an assignment to get you comfortable to talk about your venture. And I'm forever appreciative of Communitas and everything that they've been able to give me so that I can be the social entrepreneur I am today.
That is beautifully said. And I just feel like the next step for Communitas is to host a birthday party for you.
Right.
It just has to be the next step.
Yeah, that sounds all right with me.
Yes, it's a birthday celebration for sure. And speaking of like bringing that community aspect into things, so you were engaged with a collaboration with Bronx Gaming Network, which is also the founder of Adventures Alumnus as well. Rudy Blanco is the founder of the Bronx Gaming Network and is an alumnus of Communitas Ventures Cohort 6. So this was a gamification of the physical education experience for middle schoolers in Washington Heights. So what was this like and how did this come about?
Well, when the organization I Challenge Myself came to me and we were sort of spitballing what were some of the reasons students were not engaging in physical activity. You know, some of the things that came up was lack of spacing, the experience of the PE teacher. It wasn't fun. PE at the school was looked at more as a chore and a check the box. And so I remember having a conversation with Rudy one time about how he felt that gaming can be physical. I was like, oh, okay. I challenged myself. This is a problem that they were having. These were some of their solutions. Rudy, through the Bronx Gaming, had his solutions, bringing it together. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the framework for gaming is part of the framework around physical activity. And so we were able to put it together. And what the middle schoolers came up with in terms of just designing their own game and thinking outside the box, it was definitely for Rudy and the Bronx Gaming Network as it related to youth development and how do we take this framework and now drop it into physical education. And then on my end is understanding gaming more, how it goes from a concept to software, and then taking elements of that so that it can be an experience for students. What the students were able to produce was phenomenal. It was quite the experience.
That sounds like the experience and just like getting them involved.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And it's also interesting to think about this in terms of your story about the recess moment earlier. And it's also interesting to think about the effects of the different kinds of play and it has on the brain. So, and it also helps us overcome these challenges in our lives. So I love that you mentioned that as well.
Yes.
And speaking of, have you used the Hay Ground Harlem space for your venture or have you attended events there?
Yes, definitely have attended events there. In my mind, first thing I think of like empowerment sessions, like the different workshops that they've had. I had an opportunity to be one of the mentors. So being able to be in the Hay Ground space, like when it first opened, I know it was something that was talked about for a while. Mm-hmm. And so seeing it open and seeing the community they've created. Also for us, we've had team building sessions there. Last year, we hosted a town hall with community in the Bronx of different CBOs and transportation alternatives, Department of Parks and Department of Transportation. So I definitely always reach out to the Communitas team whenever we have different ventures.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. And Maria Elena, you also are a participant in what came to be known as the Education Collective, which is a group of alumni from the Ventures Accelerator Program. So what is it like? You speak about your experience in Communitas, being interested in how it brings together a community of people who look like you or thinking in the same community. So what was it like for you to put your heads together with folks involved in education in various manners? And does this inform your thinking about equity design?
Yeah, what was great about that was that we had different ventures and different solutions. So going around that perspective, right? So for us, we are strategy and capacity building, whereas some others were more around direct service. And then there were different services, right, around education. So whether it was literacy, whether it was more about public speaking, whether it was empowerment, it was a good understanding of, oh, okay, that's what you do. Okay, that's what you do. All right, do you focus on this? It was great to be able to talk about education with like minds and other entrepreneurs and to be able to also think about from a business perspective, right? How can we all thrive and sustain each of our businesses?
You can hear the other members of the Education Collective, all Communitas Ventures Accelerator alumni, in Season 2 of Communitas of New York. These entrepreneurs are Andrea Augustus of Poetic Black Girl, Ibrahima Badji of Good Vibes NYC, and Amber Peters of On Track with Ms. P.
So once again, just grateful for that opportunity and to be a part of a platform that allowed us to gain insight on what it means to be a social entrepreneur with education under our belt.
Yes, that is amazing. And I love that. And I remember that group as well. So I love that. And so shifting into the impact and also the future, do you have in mind a specific way of measuring the impact your work may have on the communities you serve? And I know that on the Equity Design website, you mentioned moving the needle on specific statistics linked to the Bronx.
Yeah. So what we do on our end, we measure based off of technical assistant hours. Mm-hmm. So far we've had over 2,000 hours of technical assistance. And what this tells us is that, right, versus workshops, professional development, these engagement sessions, when we're talking to people, when we're building out what program design looks like, it's that one-on-one where people have an opportunity to let you know what are the areas they want to focus on for their community, what a more healthier and active community can do for them personally or for their family. So these technical assistant opportunities are those one-on-one sessions. Then we also measure in terms of what services are number one rated service, and that is program design and implementation. So once again, being able to work through, right, using strategy, what makes sense for each community. So 2,000 plus hours, right, going towards technical assistance and program design is where we see the most impact as it relates to our service. And then in the other areas, we look at how many volunteers do we access within a given school year? And the reason why is because volunteers help with sustainability. So that's another area. We would love to move it into an area of, okay, if we do, for instance, a health fair. Well, first off, if you talk to anybody I know and you ask them, what does Equity Design think about health fairs? Not a fan of one-off health fairs, because outside of reach, what is the other impact? Access to health services, but where's the follow-up? Mm-hmm. Right. So ideally, would love to be able to have a health fair that goes on for weeks and weeks and weeks on end, so that now that family can get access to free healthcare and you're monitoring them. Are you monitoring the blood pressure of the parents? Are you monitoring if the child had juvenile diabetes? So now we have a space to give them the resources and the access. There are areas that we definitely want to start to move into. And I'm always mindful, like, whoa, you know, we're still a relatively young organization. So to be able to take, right, how many hours of physical activity through our organization we've have impacted, how many hours of technical assistance, how many hours of program planning. So these are important, impactful hours. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely, as we continue to grow and move into other areas, that we strongly feel that this is how we can move the needle in not only the Bronx, but in other communities that have low physical activity engagement.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. That's so phenomenal. I mean, I have been enjoying this conversation so much, and I'm pretty sure the listeners have as well, and just all the things that you're doing. And also, like you mentioned, like the tracking of the things with the data. So If you could give one piece of advice to entrepreneurs who are passionate about making an impact in the realms of education and health, but they're just starting out, what would you say?
Honestly, I would say give yourself time. Mm-hmm. To really understand your audience and your approach. So originally, Equity Design started out with the thought of more of a direct service. And because of those discoveries that Communitas, Esmeralda had us do,
Esmeralda Herrera was the Director of Programs and Community Relations at Communitas America.
I discovered that's not what was needed. So as an entrepreneur, we have a thought, like we're obviously looking to solve a problem, right? Any entrepreneur, there's a problem, there's a gap, and it can be personal to us, but is that what the market needs? Mm-hmm. And so having to pivot from the mindset of, yes, this is my business, but this is not what the community is looking for. So it was a strong pivot, not a bad pivot, but this is strategy. strategy, capacity building, being an ally, evaluations, that is what the community needed, sustainability. So I would say to give yourself time and the space to do the discovery. You can always take steps back, but you never get back like that first year of being an entrepreneur. You just don't. So giving yourself the space to learn and to really talk to people about your idea and to listen. I don't like, oh, you don't get it. Forget it. Like,
yeah.
No, just listen to what they have to say because it's a perspective.
That is some solid advice. Solid advice.
I mean, yes.
Amazing. So as we wrap up, you also talk about giving people the tools they need for longevity. On the Equity Design website, it also states, we not only understand how people move, but how communities move, and that people are the ones that impact, grow, and sustain their communities. And I can see how this movement of human bodies, not only in a literal and practical sense, like promoting longevity, but it also in a sense of generating community power is going to create that kind of foundation that can serve generations to come. So thank you so much for the work that you are doing.
Yes. Well, thank you, Monique. For having me and the Communitas team for having me. I really appreciate this moment.
We appreciate you, and the people are listening and they're like, okay, where can we find you? Where can we support you? And where can we stay connected?
Yes. So our website, equitydesigninc.com, is the best way to learn more about us. And on Instagram at equitydesigninc is where you can follow us. Not going to lie to you as an entrepreneur. That's really tough. It's tough to be able to keep up the social media. But yeah, every now and then, you know, we there. And where they can find us is especially in the Bronx at neighboring schools. So definitely being able to hit us up on IG to find out what Equity Design is doing and what we gotten ourselves into.
Certainly. And Maria Elena, thank you again for being on Communitas of New York.
Yes, thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Visit our website for more information about this and all of our shows. You can find that as well as information about the entrepreneurs and conversation in the show notes. Thank you for listening and see you soon. My name is Monique T. Marshall and this is Communitas of New York. Season 3 is produced by Simone Jean and David Michael D. Gregoria.